A Clockwork Orange, written by Anthony Burgess, read by Phil Daniels. What's it gonna be then, eh? There was me, that is Alex, and my three droogs, that is Pete, Georgie and Dim. Dim being really Dim. And we sat in the Corova milk bar, making up our rasudoks what to do with the evening. A flip, dark, chill winter bastard, though dry. The Corova milk bar was a milk plus mesto, and you may, oh my brothers, have forgotten what these mestos were like, things changing so scurry these days, and everybody very quick to forget, newspapers not being read much neither. But what they sold there was milk plus something else. They had no license for selling liquor. But there was no law yet against prodding some of the new veshes, which they used to put into the old Maloko. So you could peat it with Velocet or Symphomesque or Drenchrom or one or two other veshes, which would give you a nice quiet horror show 15 minutes admiring Bog and all his holy angels and saints in your left shoe with lights bursting all over your mudsg. Or you could peat milk with knives in it, as we used to say, and this would sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of dirty 20-to-1. And that was what we were peating this evening, I'm starting off the story with. Our pockets were full of deng, so there was no real need from the point of view of cresting any more Pretty Polly to toll-chock some old vec in an alley and vidy him swim in his blood while we counted the takings and divided by four. Nor to do the ultra-violent on some shivering, starry, grey-haired petitzer in a shop and go smacking off with a till's guts. But as they say, money isn't everything. The four of us were dressed in the height of fashion, which in those days was a pair of black, very tight tights, with the old jelly mould, as we called it, fitting on the crotch underneath the tights, this being to protect, and also a sort of design you could vidy clear enough in a certain light. So that I had one in the shape of a spider. Pete had a rooker, an Anne that is. Georgie had a very fancy one, of a flower. And poor old Dim had a very hound and horny one of a clown's litzo. Face, that is. Dim, not ever having much of an idea of things, and being, beyond all shadow of a doubt in Thomas, the dimmest of we four. Then we wore waisty jackets without lapels, but with these very big built-up shoulders, plechos we called them, which were a kind of mockery of having real shoulders like that. Then, my brothers, we had these off-white cravats, which looked like whipped-up cartafel or spud, with a sort of design made on it with a fork. We wore our hair not too long, and we had flip horror show boots for kicking. What's it going to be then, eh? There were these three divotchkas sitting at the counter all together, but there were four of us male chicks, and it was usually like one for all and all for one. These sharps were dressed in the height of fashion too, with purple and green and orange wigs on their gallivers, each one not costing less than 3 or 4 weeks of those sharps' wages, I should reckon, and make-up to match. Rainbows round the glazies, that is, and the rot painted very wide. Then they had long, black, very straight dresses, and on the groody part of them they had little badges of, like, silver, with different male chicks' names on them, Joe and Mike and such like. These were supposed to be the names of different male chicks they'd spatted with before they were 14. They kept looking our way, and I nearly felt like saying, the three of us, at the corner of my rot, that is, should go off for a bit of pole and leave poor old Dim behind, because it would just be a matter of kaputting Dim a demi-litre of white, but this time with a dollop of Symphomesque in it. But that wouldn't really have been like playing the game. Dim was very, very ugly, and like his name, but he was a horror show, filthy fighter, and very handy with the boot. What's it going to be then, eh? The Chilovec sitting next to me, there being this long, big, plushy seat that ran round three walls, was well away, with his glasses glazed and sort of burbling slovos like Aristotle, wishy-washy, works, outing, cycloman, get, forficulate, smartish. He was in the land all right, well away, in orbit, and I knew what it was like having tried it like everybody else had done. But at this time, I got to thinking it was a cowardly sort of vesk, oh my brothers. You'd lay there after you'd drunk the old Maloko, and then you got the messel that everything all round you was sort of in the past. You could vidy it all right, all of it, very clear. Tables, the stereo, the lights, the sharps and the malchicks. But it was like some vesh that used to be there, but was not there no more. and you were sort of hypnotised by your boot or your shoe or your fingernail, as it might be. And at the same time, you were sort of picked up by the old scruff and shook like you might be a cat. You got shook and shook till there was nothing left. You lost your name and your body and yourself, and you didn't care. And you waited till your boot or your fingernail got yellow, then yellower and yellower all the time. Then the light started cracking like atomics, and the boot or fingernail or, as it might be, a bit of dirt on your trouser bottom turned into a big, big, big mesto, bigger than the whole world, and you were just going to get introduced to old Bog or God when it was all over. You came back to here and now whimpering sort of, with all your rot all squaring up for a boo-ho-ho. Now, that's very nice, but very cowardly. You were not put on this earth just to get in touch with God. That sort of thing could sap all the strength and the goodness out of a Chelovek. What's it going to be then, eh? The stereo was on, and you got the idea that the singer's gollus was moving from one part of the bar to another, flying up to the ceiling and then swooping down again and whizzing from wall to wall. It was Bertie Lasky rasping a real starry oldie called "You Blister My Paint." One of the three petitsas at the counter, the one with the green wig, kept pushing her belly out and pulling it in time to what they called the music. I could feel the knives in the old Maloko starting to prick, and now I was ready for a bit of 20-1, so I yelped, "Out, out, out, out," like a doggy. And then I cracked this Vec who was sitting next to me, and well away, and burbling a horror show crack on the uko or earol. But he didn't feel it, and went on with his telephonic hardware, and when the farfuculal gets rubber-dub-dub, he'd feel it all right when he came to, out of the land. "Where out?" said Georgie. "Just to keep walking," I said, "and vidy what turns up, oh my little brothers." So we scattered out into the big winter notchy and walked down Margarita Boulevard, and then turned into Boothby Avenue, and there we found what we were pretty well looking for. A Malenki jest to start off the evening with. There was a doddery, starry, schoolmaster-type Vec, glasses on and his rot open to the cold, notchy air. He had books under his arm and a crappy umbrella, and was coming round the corner from Public Biblio, which not many ludies used those days. You never really saw many of the old bourgeois types out after nightfall those days. What with a shortage of police and we fine young Mal Chickiewicks about. And this prof-type Chelovek was the only one walking in the whole of the street. So we ghoulied up to him, very polite, and I said, "Pardon me, brother." He looked a malenky bit poogly when he'd vidied the four of us like that, coming up so quiet and polite and smiling. But he said, "Yes? What is it?" In a teacher-type gollus, as if he was trying to show us he wasn't poogly. I said, "I see you have books under your arm, brother. It is indeed a rare pleasure these days to come across somebody that still reads, brother." "Oh," he said, all shaky, "is it? Oh, I see." And he kept looking from one to the other of we four, finding himself now like in the middle of a very smiling and polite square. "Yes," I said, "it would interest me greatly, brother, if you would kindly allow me to see what books those are that you have under your arm. I like nothing better in this world than a good, clean book, brother." "Clean," he said. "Clean, eh?" And then Pete scavatted these three books from him and handed them round real scorry. Being free, we all had one each to vidy, except for Dim. The one I had was called Elementary Crystallography, so I opened it up and said, "Excellent, really first class," keeping turning the pages. Then I said in a very shock-type gollus, "But what is this here? What is this filthy slovo? I blush to look at this word." "You disappoint me, brother. You do, really." "But," he tried, but. "Now," said Georgie, "here is what I should call real dirt. There's one slovo beginning with an F and another with a C. He had a book called The Miracle of the Snowflake."
"Oh,"
said poor old Dim, smotting over Pete's shoulder and going too far, like he always did.
"It says here what he done to her, and there's a picture and all."
"Why," he said,
"you're nothing but a filthy-minded old skypebird."
"An old man of your age, brother," I said, and I started to rip up the book I'd got. The others did the same with the ones they had. Dim and Pete doing a tug-of-war with a rhombohedral system. The starry prof type began to creech. But those are not mine. Those are property of the municipality. This is sheer wantonness and vandal work. Or some such slovos. And he tried to sort of wrest the books back off us, which was like pathetic. You deserve to be taught a lesson, brother, I said. That you do. This crystal book I had was very tough bound and hard to raz-rez to bits, being real starry and made in days when things were made to last like. But I managed to rip the pages up and chuck them in handfuls of like snowflakes, though big, all over this creeching old Vec. And then the others did the same with theirs, old Dim just dancing about like the clown he was. There you are, said Pete. There's the mackerel of the cornflake for you, you dirty reader of filth and nastiness. You naughty old Vec, you, I said, and then we began to filly about with him. Pete held his rookers, and Georgie sort of hooked his rot wide open for him, and Dim yanked out his false zubies, upper and lower. He threw these down on the pavement, and then I treated them to the old boot crush, though they were hard bastards like, being made of some new horror show plastic stuff. The old Vec began to make sort of chumbling shooms. Woof, woof, woof. So Georgie let go of holding his goobers apart and just let him have one in the toothless rock with his ringy fist. And that made the old Vec start moaning a lot then. Then out comes the blood, my brothers. Real beautiful. So all we did then was to pull his outer platties off, stripping him down to his vest and long underpants. Very starry, Dim smacked his head off near. And then Pete kicks him lovely in his pot. And then we let him go. He went sort of staggering off, it not having been too hard of a Tolchok really, going, not knowing where or what was what, really. And we had a snigger at him and then rifled through his pockets, Dim dancing round with his crappy umbrella meanwhile. But there wasn't much in them. There were a few starry letters, some of them dating right back to 1960, with my dearest dearest in them, and all that chapuka. And a keyring and a starry, leaky pen. Old Dim gave his umbrella dance, and of course he had to start reading one of the letters out loud, like to show the empty street he could read. My darling one, he recited in this very high-type gollus, I shall be thinking of you while you are away, and hope you will remember to wrap up warm when you go out at night. Then he let out a very shumny smack, ho, 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 pretending to start wiping his yammer with it. All right, I said, let it go, oh my brothers. In the trousers of this starry Vec, there was only a malenky bit of cutter, money that is, not more than 3 gollies. So we gave all his messy little coin a scatter treatment, it being hencorn to the amount of pretty polly we had on us already. Then we smashed the umbrella and raz-rezed his platties and gave them to the blowing winds, my brothers. And then we'd finished with a starry teacher-type Vec. We hadn't done much, I know. But that was only like the start of the evening, and I make no happy apologies to thee or thine for that. The knives in the milk plus were stabbing away, nice and horror show now. The next thing was to do the Sammy act, which was one way to unload some of our cutter, so we'd have more of an incentive like for some shop cresting, as well as being a way of buying an alibi in advance. So we went into the Duke of New York in Amos Avenue, and sure enough, in the snug, there were 3 or 4 babuchkas peating their black and suds on S.A., state aid. Now we were the very good Malchicks, smiling good evening song to one and all. Though these wrinkled old lighters started to get all shook, their veiny old rookers all trembling round their glasses and making the suds spill on the table. Leave us be, lads, said one of them, her face all mappy with being 1,000 years old. We're only poor old women. But we just made with the zubies. Flash, flash, flash. Sat down, rang the bell, and waited for the boy to come. When he came, all nervous, and rubbing his rookers on his grazzy apron, we ordered us 4 veterans, a veteran being rum and cherry brandy mixed, which was popular just then, some liking a dash of lime in it. That being the Canadian variation. Then I said to the boy, give these poor old babuchkas over there a nourishing something. Large Scotchman all round and something to take away. And I poured my pocket of deng all over the table. And the other 3 did likewise, oh my brothers. So double fire golds were brought in for the scared starry lighters, and they knew not what to do or say. One of them got out, "Thanks, lads." But you could see they thought that there was something dirty-like coming. Anyway, they were each given a bottle of Yank General, cognac that is, to take away, and I gave money for them to be delivered, each a dozen of blackened suds that following morning. They to leave their stinking old chinas addresses at the counter. Then with the cutter that was left over, we did purchase, my brothers, all the meat, pies, pretzels, cheese snacks, crisps and chop bars in that mesto, and those two were for the old sharps. Then we said, back in a minuto. And the old petitsas were still saying, "Thanks, lads," and "God bless you, boys." And we were going out without one set of cutter in our carmans.
"Makes you feel real dooby, that does," said Pete.
You could vidy that poor old Dim, the Dim, didn't quite pony all that, but he said nothing for fear of being called gloopy and a domeless wonder boy. Well, we went off now round the corner to Attlee Avenue, and there was this sweets and cancer shop still open. We'd left them alone nearly 3 months now, and the whole district had been very quiet on the whole, so the armed militants or Ros patrols weren't round there much, being more north of the river these days. We put our maskies on. New jobs these were. Real horror show. Wonderfully done, really. They were like faces of historical personalities. They gave you the names when you bought. And I had Disraeli. Pete had Elvis Presley. Georgie had Henry VIII. And poor old Dim had a poet vet called P.B. Shelley. They were a real light disguise, hair and all. And they were some very special plastic vesh, so you could roll it up when you're done with it and hide it in your boot. The three of us went in, Pete keeping Chasso without, not that there was anything to worry about out there. As soon as we launched on the shop, we went for Slouse, who ran it, a big port wine jelly of a vec who vidded at once what was coming and made straight for the inside where the telephone was and perhaps his well-oiled pushka, complete with 6 dirty rounds. Dim was round that counter scorry as a bird, sending packets of snouty flying and cracking over a big cutout showing a sharp, with all her zoobies going flash at the customers and her groodies near hanging out to advertise some new brand of cancers. What you could vidy then was a sort of big ball rolling into the inside of a shop behind the curtain, this being old Dim and Slouse sort of locked in a death struggle. You could slushy panting and snoring and kicking behind the curtain, and the veshes falling over and swearing, and then glass going, smash, smash, smash. Mother Slouse, the wife, was sort of froze behind the counter. We could tell she would creech murder given one chance, so I was round that counter very scurry and had a hold of her, and a horror show big lump she was too, all nuking of scent with flip-flop big bobbing groodies on her. I got my rooker round her rot to stop her belting out death and destruction to the four winds of heaven. But this lady doggy gave me a large foul bite on it, and it was me that did the creeching. And then she opened up beautiful with a flip yell for the militants. Well, then she had to be toe-chopped proper with one of the weights for the scales, and then a fair tap with a crowbar they had for opening cases. And that brought the red out like an old friend. So we had her down on the floor, and a rip of her platties for fun, and a gentle bit of the boot to stop her moaning. And vidding her lying there with her groodies on show, I wondered, should I or not? But that was for later on in the evening. Then we cleaned the till, and there was flip horror show takings that notchy, and we had a few packs of the very best top cancers apiece. Then off we went, my brothers.
"A real big, heavy, great bastard he was,"
Dim kept saying. I didn't like the look of Dim. He looked dirty and untidy, like a vec had been in a fight, which he had been, of course. But you should never look as though you have been. His cravat was like someone had trampled on it. His mask had been pulled off, and he had floor dirt on his litzo. So we got him in an alleyway and tidied him up a malenky bit, soaking our tashtooks in spit to chase the dirt off. The things we did for old Dim. We were back in the Duke of New York very scurry, and I reckoned by my watch we hadn't been more than 10 minutes away. The starry old babuchkas were still there on the blackened suds and Scotchmen we'd bought them, and we said, "Hello there, girlies. What's it going to be?" They started on the old, "Very kind lads. God bless you, boys." So we ran the collar call and brought a different waiter in this time, and we ordered beers with rum in, being sore athirst, my brothers, and whatever the old petitsas wanted. Then I said to the old babushkas, "We haven't been out of here, have we? Been in here all the time, haven't we?" They all caught on real scorry and said, "That's right, lads. Not been out of our sight, you haven't. God bless you, boys." Drinking. Not that it mattered, really. About half an hour went by before there was any sign of life among the Millicents. And then it was only two very young Rosses that came in, very pink under their big copper schlemmies. One said,
"You lot know anything about the happenings at Slouse's shop this night?"
"Us?" I said, innocent. "Why? What happened?"
"Stealing and roughing. Two hospitalizations. Where have you lot been this evening?"
"I don't go for that nasty tone," I said. "I don't care much for these nasty insinuations. A very suspicious nature all this betokeneth, my little brothers." "They've been in here all night, lads," the old sharp started to creech out. "God bless them. There's no better lot of boys living for kindness and generosity. Been here all the time they have. Not seen them move, we haven't."
"We're only asking," said the other young Millicent. "We've got our job to do like anyone else."
But they gave us a nasty warning look before they went out. As they were going, we handed them a bit of lip music. But myself, I couldn't help a bit of disappointment at things as they were those days. Nothing to fight against, really. Everything as easy as kiss my sherries. Still, the night was still very young. When we got outside the Duke of New York, we vidded by the main bar's long lighted window a burbling old pioneer or drunkie, howling away at the filthy songs of his fathers and going blurp, blurp in between, as though it might be a filthy old orchestra and his stinking rotten guts. One vesh I could never stand was that. I could never stand to see a mooge all filthy and rolling and burping and drunk, whatever his age might be. But more especially when he was real starry like this one was. He was sort of flattened to the wall and his platties were a disgrace, all creased and untidy and covered in cowl and mud and filth and stuff. So we got hold of him and cracked him with a few good horror show tolchocks. But he still went on singing. The song went, "And I will go back to my darling, when you, my darling, are gone." But when Dim fisted him a few times in his filthy drunkard's rot, he shut up singing and started to creech, "Go on, do me in, you bastard cowards. I don't want to live anyway, not in a stinking world like this one." I told Dim to lay off a bit then, because it used to interest me sometimes to slushy what some of these starry decreps had to say about life and the world. I said, "Oh? And what's stinking about it?" He cried out, "It's a stinking world because it lets the young get on to the old like you done. And there's no law nor order no more." He was creeching out loud and waving his rookers and making real horror show with the slovers, only the odd blurp blurp coming from his kiskas, like something was orbiting within, or like some very rude interrupting sort of mooge making a shum, so that this old vet kept sort of threatening it with his fist, shouting, "It's no world for any old man any longer, and that means I'm not one bit scared of you, my boyos, because I'm too drunk to feel the pain if you hit me, and if you kill me, I'll be glad to be dead." We smacked and then grinned, but said nothing. And then he said, "What sort of world is it at all? Men on the moon and men spinning round the earth like it might be midges round the lamp. And there's not no attention paid to earthly law nor order no more. So your worst you may do, you filthy, cowardly hooligans." Then he gave us some lip music. Like we'd done to those young Millicents. And then he started singing again. "Oh dear, dear lad, I fought for thee and bought thee peace and victory." So we cracked into him lovely, grinning all over our litzos. But he still went on singing. Then we tripped him, so he laid down flat and heavy, and a bucket load of beer vomit came whooshing out. That was disgusting, so we gave him the boot, one go each. And then it was blood, not song nor vomit that came out of his filthy old rot. Then we went on our way. It was round by the municipal power plant that we came across Billy Boy and his five droogs. Now, in those days, my brothers, the teaming up was mostly by fours or fives, these being like auto teams. 4 being a comfy number for an auto, and 6 being the outside limit for a gang size. Sometimes gangs would gang up so as to make like Malenki armies for a big night war, but mostly it was best to roam in these like small numbers. Billy Boy was something that made me want a sick, just a vidious fat grinning litzo, and he always had this von of very stale oil that's been used for frying over and over, even when he was dressing his best platties, like now. They vidied us just as we vidied them. There was like a very quiet kind of watching each other now. This would be real. This would be proper. This would be the Noj, the Uzi, the Britva, not just fisties and boots. Billy Boy and his Drew stopped what they were doing, which was just getting ready to perform something on a weepy young divotchka they had there, not more than 10. She creeching away but with her platties still on. Billy Boy holding her by one rooker and his number one Leo holding the other. They'd probably just been doing the dirty slovo part of the act before getting down to a Malenki bit of ultra-violence. But when they vidied us a-coming, they let go of this boo-hooing little petitza, there being plenty more where she came from, and she ran with her thin white legs flashing through the dark, still going, ooh, ooh, ooh. I said, smiling very wide and droogy, "Well, if it isn't fat, stinking Billy Goat Billy Boy in poison, how art thou, thou globby, butler-cheap, stinking chippo? Come and get one in the yarbles, if you have any yarbles, you not jelly thou." And then we started. There were 4 of us, 6 of them, like I have already indicated, but poor old Dim, for all his dimness, was worth 3 of the others in sheer madness and dirty fighting. Dim had a real horror show length of Uzi or chain round his waist, twice wound round, and he unwound this and began to swing it beautiful in the eyes or glazies. Pete and Georgie had good sharp nodges, but I, for my part, had a fine starry horror show cutthroat Britva, which, at that time, I could flash and shine artistic. So there we were, draxing away in the dark, the old loon with men on it just coming up, the stars stabbing away as it might be knives, anxious to join in the draxing. With my Britva, I managed to slip right down the front of Billy Boy's Droog's platties. Very, very neat, not even touching the plot under the cloth. Then in the draxing, this Droog of Billy Boy's suddenly found himself all opened up like a peapod, with his belly bare and his poor old yarble showing. And then he got very, very razdraz, waving and screaming and losing his guard and letting in old Dim with his chain snaking. So that old Dim chained him right in the glazies, and this Droog of Billy Boy's went tottering off and howling his heart out. We were doing very horror show, and soon we had Billy Boy's number one down underfoot, blinded with old Dim's chain, and crawling and howling about like an animal, but with one fair boot on the Gulliver. He was out and out and out. Of the 4 of us, Dim, as usual, came out the worst in point of looks. That is to say, his litso was all bloodied and his platties a dirty mess. But the others of us were still cool and whole. It was stinking fatty Billy Boy I wanted now. And there I was dancing about with my Britva, like I might be a barber on board a ship on a very rough sea, trying to get in at him with a few fair slashes on his unclean, oily litso. Billy Boy had a Noj, a long flick type, but he was a Malenki bit too slow and heavy in his movements to vred anyone really bad. And my brothers, it was real satisfaction for me to waltz left 2-3, right 2-3, and carve left cheeky and right cheeky, so that like 2 curtains of blood seemed to pour out at the same time, one on either side of his fat, filthy, oily snout in the winter starlight. Down this blood poured in like red curtains, but you could vidy Billy Boy felt not a thing, and he went lumbering on like a filthy fatty bear, poking at me with his noj. Then we sluicied the sirens, and we knew the militants were coming, with pushkas pushing out of the police auto windows at the ready. That little weepy divotchka had told them, no doubt, there being a box for calling the Rozzers not too far behind the Muni power station. "Get you soon, fear not," I called, "stinking Billy Goat. I'll have your yarbles off lovely." Then off they ran, slow and panting, except for number one Leo, out snoring on the ground, away north towards the river, and we went the other way. Just round the next turning was an alley, dark and empty and open at both ends, and we rested there, panting fast, then slower. then breathing like normal. It was like resting between the feet of two terrific and very enormous mountains, these being the flat blocks. And in the windows of all these flats, you could really like blue dancing light. This would be the telly. Tonight was what they called a worldcast, meaning that the same programme was being vidded by everybody in the world that wanted to, that being mostly the middle-aged, middle-class loodies. There would be some big, famous, stupid comic Chelovek or black singer, and it was all being bounced off the special telesatellites in outer space, my brothers. We waited panting, and we could slushy the sirening Millicents going east, so we knew we were all right now. Poor old Dim kept looking up at the stars and planets and the lunar, with his rot wide open like a kid who'd never vidded any such things before, and he said, "What's on them, I wonder? What would be up there on things like that?" I nudged him hard, saying, "Come, gloopy bastard as thou art, think thou not on them. There'll be life like down here, most likely, with some getting knived and others doing the knifing. And now, with the notchy still Molodoy, let us be on our way, oh my brothers." The others smacked at this, but poor old Dim looked at me serious, then up again at the stars and the lunar. So we went on our way down the alley, with the world cars blowing on either side. What we needed now was an auto, so we turned left coming out the alley, knowing right away we were in Priestley Place, as soon as we vidded the big bronze statue of some starry poet with an apy upper lip and a pipe stuck in a droopy old rock. Going north, we came to the filthy old film drone, peeling and dropping to bits through nobody going there much except mal chicks like me and my droogs, and then only for a yell or a razrez or a bit of in-out in the dark. We could vidy from the poster on the film drone's face, a couple of fly, dirtied spots trained on it, that there was the usual cowboy riot, with the archangels on the side of the US Marshal, six shooting at the rustlers out of hell's fighting legions, the kind of hound and horny vesh put out by state film in those days. The autos parked by the cine weren't all that horror show, crappy starry veshes most of them, but there was a newish Durango 95 that I thought might do. George had one of these polyclefs, as they called them, on his keyring, so we were soon aboard, Dim and Pete at the back, puffing away lordly at their cancers. And I turned on the ignition and started her up, and she grumbled away, real horror show. A nice, warm, vibratey feeling, grumbling all through your gutty wuts. Then I made with a noga, and we backed out lovely, and nobody vidded us take off. We fillied round what we called the back town for a bit, scaring old Vex and Chinas that were crossing the roads and zigzagging after cats and that. Then we took the road west. There wasn't much traffic about, so I kept pushing the old noga through the floorboards near, and the Durango 95 ate up the road like spaghetti. Soon it was winter trees and dark, my brothers, with a country dark, and at one place I ran over something big with a snarling, toothy rot in the headlamp. Then it screamed and squelched under, and old Dim at the back near laughed his Gulliver off, "Ho, ho, ho," at that. Then we saw one young Malchick with his sharp, lubby-lubbing under a tree, and we stopped and cheered at them. Then we bashed into them both with a couple of half-hearted toll-chocks, making them cry, and on we went. What we was after now was the old surprise visit. That was a real kick and good for smecks and lashings of the ultra-violent. We came at last to a sort of village, and just outside this village was a small sort of a cottage on its own with a bit of a garden. The lunar was well up now, and we could vidy this cottage fine and clear as I eased up and put the brake on, the other three giggling like Bazoomney, and we could vidy the name on the gate of this cottage vest was Home, a gloomy sort of name. I got out of the auto, ordering my droogs to shush their giggles and act like serious, and I opened this Malenki gate and walked up to the front door. I knocked nice and gentle, and nobody came, so I knocked a bit more, and this time I could slushy somebody coming. Then a bolt drawn, then the door inched open an inch or so. Then I could vidy this one glaz looking out at me, and the door was on a chain. "Yes, who is it?" It was a sharp's gollus, a youngest divotchka by a sound, and I said in a very refined manner of speech, a real gentleman's gollus, "Pardon, madam, most sorry to disturb you, but my friend and me were out for a walk, and my friend has taken bad all of a sudden with a very troublesome turn, and is out there on the road, dead out and groaning. Would you have the goodness to let me use your telephone to telephone for an ambulance?
We haven't got a telephone, said the Divotchka. I'm sorry, but we haven't. You'll have to go somewhere else.
From inside the Malenki cottage, I could slushy the clack, clack, clacky, clack, clack, crackety, clack, clack of some Vec typing away. And then this typing sound stopped, and there was this cello Vec, Gollus, call him. What is it, dear? Well, I said, could you, of your goodness, please let him have a cup of water? It's like a faint, you see. It seems as though he's passed out in a sort of fainting fit. The Divotchka sort of hesitated and then said, wait. Then she went off, and my three droogs had got out of the auto, quiet, and crept up horror show stealthy, putting their maskies on now. Then I put mine on. Then it was only a matter of me putting in the old rooker and undoing the chain, me having softened up this Divotchka with my gent's gollus, so that she hadn't shut the door like she should have done, us being strangers of the night. The four of us went roaring in, old Dim playing the shoot as usual, with his jumping up and down and singing out dirty slovos. And it was a nice Malenki cottage, I'll say that. We all went smacking into the room with a light on, and there was this Divotchka sort of cowering, a young, pretty bit of sharp with real horror show groodies on her. And with her was this Chelovek, who was her mooge, youngest too, with horn-rimmed otchkies on him. And on a table was a typewriter, and all papers scattered everywhere. But there was one little pile of paper, like that must have been what he'd already typed. So here was another intelligent type, bookman type, like that we'd fitted with some hours back. But this one was a writer, not a reader. Anyway, he said, what is this? Who are you? How dare you enter my house without permission? And all the time his gollus was trembling and his rookers too. So I said, never fear. If fear thou hast in thy heart, O brother, pray banish it forthwith. Then George and Pete went out to find the kitchen, while old Dim waited for orders, standing next to me with his rot wide open. What is this, then? I said, picking up the pile like a typing from off the table. And the horn-rimmed mood said, dithering, that's just what I want to know. What is this? What do you want? Get out at once before I throw you out. So poor old Dim, masked like P.B. Shelley, had a good loud smack at that, roaring like some animal. It's a book, I said. It a book you are writing. I made the old gollus very coarse. I have always had the strongest admiration for them as can write books. Then I looked at its top sheet, and there was the name, A Clockwork Orange, and I said, that's a fair gloopy title. Whoever heard of A Clockwork Orange? Then I read a Malenki bit out loud in a sort of very high-type preaching gollus. The attempt to impose upon man, a creature of growth and capable of sweetness, to ooze juicily at the last round the bearded lips of God, to attempt to impose, I say, laws and conditions appropriate to a mechanical creation, against this I raise my sword pen. Dim made the old lip music at that, and I had to smack myself. Then I started to tear up the sheets and scatter the bits over the floor. And this writer mood went sort of bazoomy and made for me with his zoobies clenched and showing yellow and his nails ready for me like claws. So that was Dim's cue, and he went grinning, going, and ah, for this vexed, dithering rot. Crack, crack, first left fisty, then right. So that our dear old droog, the red vino on tap and the same in all places, like it's put out by the same big firm, started to pour and spot that nice clean carpet and the bits of this book that I was still ripping away at. Razrez, Razrez. All this time, this Divotchka, his loving and faithful wife, just stood like froze by the fireplace, and then she started letting out little Malenki creatures, like in time to the music of old Dim's fisty work. Then George and Pete came in from the kitchen, both munching away, though with their maskies on. You could do that with them on, and no trouble. Georgie would like a cold leg of something in one rooker, and half a loaf of cleave with a big dollop of Maslow on it in the other. And Pete with a bottle of beer frothing its gulliver off, and a horror show rookerful of like plum cake. They went, haw, 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 videoing old Dim dancing round and fisting the right of it. So that the writer Vec started to platch like his life's work was ruined, going, boo-hoo-hoo, with a very square bloody rot. But it was haw, haw, haw in a muffled eater's way, and you could see bits of what they were eating. I didn't like that. it being dirty and slobbery. So I said, "Drop that mounch, I gave no permission. Grab hold of this vec here so he can video and not get away." So they put down their fatty pisture on the table, among all the flying paper, and they clopped over to the right of vec, whose horn-rimmed hotkeys were cracked but still hanging on, with old Dim still dancing round and making ornaments shake on the mantelpiece. I swept them all off then, and they couldn't shake no more, little brothers. Wiley fillied with the author of A Clockwork Orange, making his lips so all purple and dripping away like some very special sort of a juicy fruit. "All right, Dim," I said, "now for the other vesh. Bog help us all." So he did the strong man on the Devotchka, who was still creech, creech, creeching away in a very horror show, four in a bar, locking her rookers from the back, while I ripped away at this and that and the other. The others going, "haw, haw, haw," still, and real good horror show groodies they were, that then exhibited their pink glazies, oh my brothers, while I untrussed and got ready for the plunge, plunging. I could slushy cries of agony, and this right of bleeding vec that George and Pete held onto nearly got loose, howling bazoomly with the filthiest of slovos that I already knew, and others he was making up. Then after me, it was right old Dim should have his turn, which he did in a beasty, snorty, howly sort of way, with his PB Shelley masky taking no notice, while I held on to her. Then there was a changeover. Dim and me grabbing the slobbering right of vec, who was past struggling, really, only just coming out with slack sort of slovos like he was in the land in the Milk Plus bar. And Pete and Georgie had theirs. Then there was quiet, and we were like full of hate. So smashed what was left to be smashed. Typewriter, lamp, chairs. And Dim, it was typical of old Dim, watered the fire out and was going to dung on the carpet, there being plenty of paper. But I said, "No." "Out, out, out, out," I howled. The right of vec and his Xena were not really there, bloody and torn and making noises. But they'd live. So we got into the waiting auto, and I left it to Georgie to take the wheel, me feeling that Malenki bit shagged. And we went back to town, running over odd squealing things on the way. We yakked it back townwards, my brothers, but just outside, not far from what they call the Industrial Canal. We vidded the fuel needle had, like, collapsed, like our own needles had. And the auto was coughing, cuz, cuz, cuz. Not to worry over much, though, because a rail station kept flashing blue, on off, just near. The point was whether to leave the auto to be sober-ratted by the Rozzers or, us feeling like in a hate and murder mood, to give it a fair toll shot into the starry waters for a nice, heavy, loud plesk before the death of the evening. This latter we decided on. So we got out and, the brakes off, all four toll-chocked it to the edge of the filthy water that was like treacle mixed with human hull products. Then one good horror show toll-chock, and in she went. We had to dash back for fear of the filth splashing on our platties, but sploosh and glorp she went, down and lovely. "Farewell, old Droog," called Georgie, and Dim obliged with a clowny great guff. Then we made for the station to ride the one stop to centre, as the middle of the town was called. We paid our fares nice and polite and waited gentlemanly and quiet on the platform. Old Dim filling with the slot machines, his carmans being full of small Malenki coin, and ready, if need be, to distribute chalk piles to the poor and starving, though there was none such about. Then the old Espresso Rapido came lumbering in and we climbed aboard, the train looking to be near empty. To pass the 3-minute ride, we filled about with what they call the upholstery, doing some nice horror show tearing out the seat's guts, and old Dim chaining the okno till the glass cracked and sparkled in the winter air. But we're all feeling that big shagged and fagged and fashed, it having been an evening of some small energy expenditure, my brothers. Only Dim, like the clowny animal he was, full of the joys of, but looking all dirtied over and too much von of sweat on him, which was one thing I'd against old Dim. We got out at centre and walked slow back to the Corova Milk Bar, all going, a Malenki bit, and exhibiting to moon and star and lamplight our back fillings, because we were still only grand mal chicks and had schooly wool in the daytime. And when we got into the Corova, we found it fuller than we'd left it earlier on. But the Chelyabinsk, who had been burbling away in the land on White and Symphemesk or whatever, was still on at it, going,
"Urchins of dead cast in the way ho hey glil platonic time, Weatherborne."
It was probable that this was his third or fourth lot that evening, for he had that pale, inhuman look, like he had become a thing, and like his lips, so was really a piece of chalk carved. Really, if he wanted to spend so long in the land, he should have gone into one of the private cubies at the back and not stayed in the big mess, though, because here some of the male chickiewicks would filly about with him a malenky bit, though not too much, because there were powerful bruise boys hidden away in the El Corova who could stop any riot. Anyway, Dim squeezed in next to this Vec and, with his big clown's yawp that showed his hanging grape, he stabbed this Vec's foot with his own large, filthy sabog. But the Vecmar brothers heard naught, being now all above the body. It was Nadsat, milking and coking and fillying around. Nadsats were what we used to call the teens, but there were a few of the more starry ones, Vecs and Chinas alike, but not of the bourgeois, never them, laughing and gover-eating at the bar. You could tell from their barberings and loose platties, big stringy sweaters mostly, that they'd been on rehearsals at the TV studios round the corner. The Divotchkas among them had these very lively litzos and big wide rots, very red, showing a lot of teeth and smacking away and not caring about the wicked world one whit. And then the disc on the stereo twanged off and out. It was Johnny Shivago, a Rushki Koshka singing Only Every Other Day. And then the light interval, the short silence before the next one came on. One of these Divotchkas, very fair and with a big smiling red rot, and in her late 30s, I say, suddenly came with a burst of singing, only a bar and a half, and as though she was giving an example of something they'd been all gover-eating about, and it was like, for a moment, oh my brothers, some great bird had flown into the milk bar, and I felt all the little malenki hairs on my plot standing endwise, and the shivers crawling up like slow malenki lizards, and then down again. Because I knew what she sang. It was from an opera by Friedrich Gitterfenster called Das Bettzug, and it was the bit where she's snuffing it with her throat cut, and the slovos are better like this, maybe. Anyway, I shivered. But old Dim, as soon as he'd sloshied this dollop of song like a lomtick of red-hot meat plonked on your plate, let off one of his vulgarities, which in this case was a lip trump followed by a dog howl, followed by two fingers pronging twice in the air, followed by a clowny guffaw. I felt myself all of a fever and like drowning in red-hot blood, slushing and vidding Dim's vulgarity, and I said, "Bastard, filthy, drooling, mannerless bastard." Then I leaned across Georgie, who was between me and horrible Dim, and fisted Dim's scorry on the rot. Dim looked very surprised, his rot open, wiping the crovioil of his goober with his rook, and in turn looking surprised at the red flying crovy and at me.
"What for did you do that for?"
he said in his ignorant way. Not many vidded what I'd done, and those that vidded cared not. The stereo was on again and was playing a very sick electronic guitar vest. I said, "For being a bastard with no manners and not the duck of an idea how to comport yourself public-wise, oh my brother." Dim put on a hound and horny look of evil, saying,
"I don't like you should do what you done then, and I'm not your brother no more, and wouldn't want to be."
He'd taken a big snotty test tuck from his pocket and was mopping the red flow, puzzled, keeping on looking at it, frowning as if he thought that blood was for other Vecs and not for him. It was like he was singing blood to make up for his vulgarity when the Divotchka was singing music. But the Divotchka was smacking away, ha 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 now, with her droogs at the bar, her red rot working and her zubies ashine, not having noticed Dim's filthy vulgarity. It was me, really, Dim had done wrong to. I said, "If you don't like this, and you wouldn't want that, then you know what to do, little brother." Georgie said in a sharp way that made me look, "All right, let's not be starting." "That's clean up with Dim," I said. "Dim can't go all his G's need being as a little child." And I looked sharp at Georgie. Dim said, and the red crovy was easing its flow now,
"What natural right does he have to think he can give the orders and toe-chop me whenever he likes? Yarbles is what I say to him, and I'd chain his glasses out soon as look."
"Watch that," I said, as quiet as I could, with a stereo bouncing all over the walls and ceiling, and the in-the-land vet beyond dim getting loud now with his spark nearer, old Toptimate, I said. Do watch that, O Dim, if to continue to be on live thou dost wish.
Yarbles, said Dim, sneering. Great bolshy yarl blockos to you. What you'd have done, you had no right. I'll meet you with chain or nosh or brit for any time. Not having you aiming tolchocks at me reasonless. It stands to reason. I won't have it.
A nosh scrap any time you say, I snarled back. Pete said, ah, now, don't, both you male chicks. Droogs, aren't we? This isn't right droogs should behave this wise. See, there are some loose-lipped male chicks over there smecking at us, leering-like. We mustn't let ourselves down. Dim, I said, has got to learn his place, right? Wait, said Georgie. What's all this about place? This is the first I ever hear about ludies learning their place. Pete said, if the truth is known, Alex, you shouldn't have given old Dim that uncalled-for tolchock. I'll say it once and no more. I'll say it with all respect, but if it had been me you'd have given it to, you'd have had to answer. I'll say no more. And he drowned his litso in his milk glass. I could feel myself getting all razz-drazz inside, but I tried to cover it, saying calm. There has to be a leader. Discipline, there has to be, right? None of them skazatted a word or nodded even. I got more razz-drazz inside, calmer out. I said, have been in charge long now. We are all droogs, but somebody has to be in charge, right? Right? They all, like, nodded, wary-like. Dim was a-shushing the last of his crovvy off. It was Dim who said now,
right, right, dooby-doob. A bit tired, maybe. Everybody is. Best not say more.
I was surprised and just that malenky bit poogly to sluice Dim gover-eating that wise. Dim said,
bedways is right ways now, so best go home ways, right?
I was very surprised. The other two nodded, going, right, right, right. I said, you understand about that tolchock on the rot, Dim? It was the music, see? I get all bazoomy when any vec interferes with a petitza singing, as it might be. Like that then.
Best we go off home ways and get a bit of spatchka, said Dim. A long night for grand malchicks, right?
Right, right, nodded the other two. I said, I think it best we go home now. Dim has made a real horror show suggestion. If we don't meet day-wise, oh, my brothers, well then, same time, same place, tomorrow. Oh, yes, said Georgie. I think that can be arranged.
I might, said Dim, just be that malenky bit late, but same place and near same time tomorrow, surely.
He was still wiping at his goober, though no crovvy flowed any longer now.
And, he said, it's to be hoped there won't be no more of them singing petitzas in here.
Then he gave his old Dim guff a clowny big,
ho, 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 ho.
It seemed like he was too Dim to take much offence. So off we went our several ways, me belching on the cold coke I'd peated. I had my cutthroat Britva handy in case any of Billy Boy's droog should be around near the flat block waiting, or for that matter, any of the other banders or groupers or shakers that from time to time were at war with one. Where I live was with my dadda and mum, in the flats of Municipal Flat Block 18A, between Kingsley Avenue and Wilson's Way. I got to the big main door with no trouble, though I did pass one young male chick sprawling and creaking and moaning in the gutter, all cut about lovely, and saw in the lamplight also streaks of blood here and there, like signatures, my brothers, of the night's filling. And two I saw, just by 18A, a pair of Devotchka's nizhnis, doubtless rudely wrenched off in the heat of the moment, oh, my brothers, and so in. In the hallway was the good old municipal painting on the walls, vex and petitzas very well developed, stern in the dignity of labour, at workbench and machine, with not one stitch of platties on their well-developed plots. But, of course, some of the Malchiks living in 18A had, as was to be expected, embellished and decorated the said big paintings with handy pencil and ballpoint, adding hair and stiff rods and dirty ballooning slovos out of the dignified rots of these nagoi, bear that is, chinas and vex. I went to the lift, but there was no need to press the electric knopka to see if it was working or not, because it had been tolchock real horror show this night, the metal doors all buckled, some feet of rare strength indeed, so I had to walk the 10 floors up. I cursed and panted climbing, being tired in plot, if not so much in brain. I wanted music very bad this evening, that singing Divotchka in the Korova having perhaps started me off. I wanted like a big feast of it before getting my passport stamped, oh my brothers, at Sleep's Frontier, and the stripy chest lifted to let me through. I opened the door of 10-8 with my own little klooch, and inside our Malenki quarters all was quiet, the P&M both being in sleepland. A mum had laid out on the table on Malenki bit of supper, a couple of lomticks of tinned sponge meat, and a shive or so of cleeb and butter, a glass of the old cold Maloko, ho ho ho, the old Maloko, with no knives or symphomesque or dremcom in it. How wicked, my brothers, innocent milk must always seem to me now. Still, I drank and ate, growling, being more hungry than I thought at first, and I got fruit pie from the larder and tore chunks off it to stuff into my greedy rot. Then I tooth-cleaned and clicked, cleaning out the old rot with my yazik or tongue. Then I went into my own little room or den, easing off my platties as I did so. Here was my bed and my stereo, pride of my jeezny, and my discs in their cupboard and banners and flags on the wall, these being like remembrances of my corrective school life since I was 11. Oh, my brothers, each one shining and blazing with a name or number. South 4, Metro, Corkskull, Blue Division, the boys of Alpha. The little speakers of my stereo were all arranged round the room, on ceiling, walls, floor, so, lying on my bed, sluicing the music, I was like netted and meshed in the orchestra. Now what I fancied first tonight was this new violin concerto by American Jeffrey Platus, played by Odysseus Cherilos with the Macon Georgia Philharmonic. So I slid it from where it was neatly filed and switched on and waited. Then, brothers, it came. Oh, bliss, bliss in heaven. I lay all nagoy to the ceiling, my Gulliver on my rookers on the pillow, glazes closed, rot open in bliss, sluicing the sluice of lovely sounds. Oh, it was gorgeousness and gorgiosity made flesh. The trombones crunched red gold under my bed, and behind my Gulliver the trumpets three wise silver flamed, and there by the door the timps rolling through my guts and out again, crunch like candy thunder. Oh, it was wonder of wonders. And then a bird of like rarest spun heaven metal, or like silvery wine flowing in a spaceship, gravity all nonsense now, came the violin solo above all other strings, and those strings were like a cage of silk round my bed. Then flute and oboe bored like worms of like platinum into the thick, thick toffee, gold and silver. I was in such bliss, my brothers. P&M, in their bedroom next door, had learnt now not to knock on the wall with complaints of what they called noise. I taught them. Now they would take sleep pills, perhaps knowing the joy I had in my night music. They had already taken them. As I slushied, my glazes tight shut to shut in the bliss that was better than any synthemess, bog or god, I knew such lovely pictures. There were Vex and Petitsas, both young and starry, lying on the ground screaming for mercy, and I was smacking all over my rot and grinding my boot in their litzos. And there were Divotchkas ripped and creaching against walls, and I plunging like a slager into them. And indeed, when the music, which was one movement only, rose to the top of its big, highest tower, then, lying there on my bed with glazes tight shut and rookers behind my Gulliver, I broke and spattered and cried, ah, with the bliss of it, and so the lovely music glided to its glowing close. After that I had lovely Mozart, the Jupiter, and there were new pictures of different litzos to be ground and splashed, and it was after this that I thought I would have just one last disc only before crossing the border, and I wanted something starry and strong and very firm. So it was J.S. Bach I had, the Brandenburg Concerto, just for the middle and last strings. And slushing with different bliss than before, I vidded again this name on the paper I razzed that night, a long time ago it seems, in that cottage called Home. The name was about A Clockwork Orange. Listening to J.S. Bach, I began to pony better what that meant now. And I thought, slushing away to the brown gorgeousness of the starry German master, that I would have liked to have toe-chopped them both harder and ripped them to ribbons on their own floor. The next morning, I woke up at 0800 hours, my brothers. And as I still felt shagged and fagged and fashed and bashed and my glazies were stuck together, real horror show with sleep glue, I thought I would not go to school. I thought how I would have a malenky bit longer in the bed, an hour or two, say, and then get dressed nice and easy. Perhaps even have a splosh about in the bath, make toast for myself, and slushy the radio or read the Gazetta, all on my odinoki. And then in the after lunch, I might perhaps, if I still felt like it, itty off to the old schooly wall and see what was veriting in the great seat of gloopy, useless learning, oh my brothers. I heard my papa grumbling and trampling, and then itching off to the dye works where we rabbited. And then my mum called in a very respectful gollus, as she did now I was growing up big and strong. "It's gone 8, son. You don't want to be late again." So I called back, "A bit of a pain in me gulliver. Leave us be, and I'll try and sleep it off. Then I'll be right as dodgers for this after." I slushied her, give a sort of sigh, and she said, "I'll put your breakfast in the oven then, son. I've got to be off myself now." Which was true, there being this law for everybody, not a child, nor with child, nor ill, to go out rabbiting. My mum worked at one of the state marts, as they called them, filling up the shelves with tin soup and beans and all that cow. So I slushied her clank a plate in the gas oven, like, and then she was putting her shoes on and then getting her coat from behind the door and then sighing again. Then she said, "I'm off now, son." But I let on to be back in sleepland, and then I did doze off, real horror show, and I had a queer and very real-like sneety, dreaming for some reason of my Drew Georgie. In this sneety, he got, like, very much older and very sharp and hard, and was gubber-eating about discipline and obedience, and how all the mill chicks under his control had to jump hard at it and throw up the old salute, like, being in the army. And there was me in line like the rest saying, "Yes, sir, no, sir," and then I vidded clear that Georgie had these stars on his plechos, and he was like a general. And then he brought in old Dim with a whip, and Dim was a lot more starry and grey and had a few zoobies missing, as you could see when he let out a smeck vidying me. And then my Drew Georgie said, pointing like at me, "That man has filth and cow all over his platties." And it was true. Then I creeched, "Don't hit me, please, don't, brothers," and started to run. And I was running like in circles, and Dim was after me, smecking his gulliver off, cracking with the old whip. And each time I got a real horror show toll chop with this whip, there was like a very loud electric bell ring, 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 ringing, and this bell was like sort of a pain too. Then I woke up real scorry, my heart going bap, bap, bap. And of course, there was really a bell going brrrr, and it was our front door bell. I let on that nobody was at home, but this brrrr still ittied on. And then I heard a goller shouting through the door, "Come on then! Get out of it! I know you're in bed!" I recognised the gollus right away. It was the gollus of P.R. Deltoid, a real gloopy naz, that one. What they called my post-corrective advisor, an overworked vet with hundreds on his books. I shouted, "Right, right, right!" in the gollus of light pain, and I got out of bed and attired myself, oh my brothers, in a very lovely overgown of like silk, with designs of like great cities all over this overgown. Then I put my nogas into very comfy woolly tuffles, combed my luscious glory, and was ready for P.R. Deltoid. When I opened up, he came shambling in, looking shagged, a battered old schlapper on his gulliver, his raincoat filthy. "Ah, Alex, boy," he said to me. "I met your mother, yes? She said something about a pain somewhere, hence not at school, yes?" "A rather intolerable pain in the head, brother, sir," I said in my gentleman's gollus. "I think it should be clear by this afternoon." "Or certainly by this evening, yes?" said P.R. Deltoid. "The evening is a great time, isn't it, Alex, boy? Sit," he said. "Sit, sit." As though this was his dommy, and me his guest. And he sat in this starry rocking chair of my dad's and began rocking, as if that was all he had come for. I said, "A cup of the old chai, sir. Tea, I mean." "No time," he said. And he rocked, giving me the old glint under frowning brows, as if with all the time in the world. "No time, yes?" he said, gloopy. So I put the kettle on. Then I said, "To what do I owe the extreme pleasure? Is anything wrong? Wrong, he said, very scurry and sly, sort of hunched looking at me but still rocking away. Then he caught sight of an advert in the Gazetta, which was on the table. A lovely, smacking young petitza with her groodies hanging out to advertise my brothers, the glories of Jugoslav beaches. Then, after sort of eating her up in two swallows, he said, "Why should you think in terms of there being anything wrong? Have you been doing something you shouldn't, yes?" "Just a manner of speech," I said, "sir." "Well," said P.R. Deltoid, "it's just a manner of speech from me to you that you watch out, little Alex, because next time, as you very well know, it's not going to be the corrective school anymore. Next time it's going to be the Bari place, and all my work ruined. If you have no consideration for your horrible self, you might at least have some for me, who have sweated over you. A big black mark, I tell you in confidence, for every one we don't reclaim. A confession of failure for every one of you that ends up in the stripy hole." "I've been doing nothing I shouldn't, sir," I said. "The Millicents have nothing on me, brother, sir, I mean." "Cut out this clever talk about Millicents," said P.R. Deltoid, very weary but still rocking. "Just because the police have not picked you up lately doesn't, as you very well know, mean you've not been up to some nastiness. There was a bit of a fight last night, wasn't there? There was a bit of shuffling with nausea's and bike chains and the like. One of a certain fat boy's friends was ambulanced off late from near the power plant and hospitalised. Cut about very unpleasantly, yes? Your name was mentioned. The word got through to me by the usual channels. Certain friend of yours were named also. There seems to have been a fair amount of assorted nastiness last night. Oh, nobody can prove anything about anybody as usual. But I'm warning you, little Alex, being a good friend to you, as always, the one man in this sore and sick community who wants to save you from yourself." "I appreciate all that, sir," I said, "very sincerely." "Yes, you do, don't you?" he sort of sneered. "Just watch it. That's all, yes. We know more than you think, little Alex." Then he said, in a gollus of great suffering but still rocking away, "What gets into you all? We study the problem, and we've been studying it for damn well near a century, yes. But we get no further with our studies. You've got a good home here, good loving parents. You've got not too bad of a brain. Is it some devil that crawls inside you?" "Nobody's got anything on me, sir," I said. "I've been out of the rookers of the Millicents for a long time now." "That's just what worries me," sighed P.R. Deltoid. "A bit too long of a time to be healthy. You're about due now, by my reckoning. That's why I'm warning you, little Alex, to keep your handsome young proboscis out of the dirt, yes? Do I make myself clear?" "As an unmuddied lake, sir," I said. "Clear as an azure sky of deepest summer. You can rely on me, sir." And I gave him a nice zooby smile. But when he ockadeated, and I was making this very strong pot of chai, I grinned to myself over this vetch that P.R. Deltoid and his droogs worried about. "All right, I do bad. What with crastin and tolchocks and calves with Britver and the old in-out, in-out. And if I get loveted, well, too bad for me. Oh, my little brothers, you can't run a country with every chelovet comporting himself in my manner at a night. So if I get loveted, and it's 3 months in this mesto and another 6 in that, and then, as P.R. Deltoid so kindly warns, next time, in spite of the great tenderness of my summers, brothers, it's the great unearthly zoo itself, well, I say, fair. But a pity, my lords, because I just cannot bear to be shut in. My endeavour shall be, in such future as stretches out its snowy and lily-white arms to me before the nosh overtakes or the blood splatters its final chorus in twisted metal and smashed glass on the high road, to not get loveted again. Which is fair speeching. But, brothers, this biting of their toenails over what is the cause of badness is what turns me into a fine laughing Malchick. They don't go into the cause of goodness, so why the other shop? If ludies are good, that's because they like it, and I wouldn't ever interfere with their pleasures. And so, of the other shop. And I was patronising the other shop. More. Badness is of the self, the one. The you or me on our oddy knockies, and that self is made by old Bog or God, and is his great pride and radosti. But the not-self cannot have the bad, meaning they of the government and the judges and the schools cannot allow the bad because they cannot allow the self. And is not our modern history, my brothers, the story of brave Malenki cells fighting these big machines? I am serious with you, brothers, over this. But what I do because I like to do. So now, this smiling winter morning, I drink this very strong chai with maloko and spoon after spoon of sugar, me having a sladky tooth. And I dragged out of the oven the breakfast my poor old mum had cooked for me. It was an egg fried, that and no more. But I made toast and ate egg and toast and jam, smacking away at it while I read the Gazetta. The Gazetta was the usual about ultraviolence and bank robberies and strikes and footballers making everybody paralytic with fright by threatening not to play next Saturday if they did not get higher wages, naughty male chickywicks as they were. Also, there were more space trips and bigger stereo TV screens and offers of free packets of soap flakes in exchange for the labels on soup tins. Amazing offer for 1 week only, which made me smack. And there was a bolshy big article on modern youth, meaning me, so I gave the old bow, grinning like Bazoomly, by some clever bald Chelovek. I read this with care, my brothers, slurping away at the old chai, cup after tass after chassa, crunching my lomtics of black toast dipped in jammy wham and eggy weg. This learned vid said the usual veshes about no parental discipline, as he called it, and the shortage of real horror show teachers who would lambast bloody beggary out of their innocent poops and make them go boo-hoo-hoo for mercy. All this was gloopy and made me smack. But it was like nice to go unknown one was making the news all the time, oh my brothers. Every day there was something about modern youth. But the best verse they ever had in the old Gazetta was by some starry pop in a doggy collar who said that in his considered opinion, and he was gover-eating as a man of bog, it was the devil that was abroad and was like ferreting his way into young, innocent flesh. And it was the adult world that could take the responsibility for this with their wars and bombs and nonsense. So that was all right, so we knew what he talked of, being a god-man. So we young, innocent malchicks could take no blame. Right. When I'd gone irk a couple of razzies on my full innocent stomach, I started to get out my day platties from my wardrobe, turning the radio on. There was music playing, a very nice Malenki string quartet, my brothers, by Claudius Birdman, one that I knew well. I had to have a smack, though, thinking of what I'd vidded once in one of those light articles on modern youth, about how modern youth would be better off if a lively appreciation of the arts could be encouraged. Great music, it said, and great poetry would like quieten modern youth down and make modern youth more civilised. Civilised, my civilised yarbles. Music always sort of sharpened me up, oh my brothers, and made me feel like old Bog himself, ready to mate with the old donor and blitzin' and have vex and petitzas creeching away in my ha-ha power. And when I cheested up my litza and rookers a bit and done dressing, my day platties were like student wear, the old blue pantaloonies with sweater with A for Alex. I thought here at least was time to itty off to the disc boutique and cut a two, my pockets being full of Pretty Polly, to see about this long-promised and long-ordered stereo Beethoven No. 9, the choral symphony, that is, recorded on masterstroke by the S. Sham Sinfonia under L. Mahawir. So out I went, brothers. The day was very different from the night. The night belonged to me and my droogs and all the rest of the nadsats, and the starry bourgeois lurked indoors, drinking in the gloopy worldcasts. But the day was for the starry ones, and there always seemed to be more Rosas or Millicents about during the day too. I got the autobus from the corner and rode to centre, and then I walked back to Taylor Place, and there was the disputic I favoured with my inestimable custom. Oh, my brothers, it had the gloopy name of Melodia. But it was a real horror show mesto, and scorry most times at getting the new recordings. I walked in, and the only other customers were two young petitzas sucking away at ice sticks, and this mark was Dead Cold Winter and sort of shuffling through the new pop discs. Johnny Burnaway, Stash Crow, The Mixers, Lay Quiet a While with Ed and Id Molotov, and all the rest of that cow. These two petitzers couldn't have been more than 10, and they too, like me, it seemed, evidently had decided to take the morning off from the old schooly wall. They saw themselves, you could see, as real grown-up Devotskas already, what with the old hip swing when they saw your faithful narrator brothers, and padded grudies and red all ploshed on their goobers. I went up to the counter, making with a polite zooby smile at old Andy behind it. Always polite himself, always helpful, a real horror show type of a vet, though bald and very, very thin. He said, "Aha! I know what you want, I think. Good news, good news. It has arrived." And with, like, big conductors, rookers beating time, he went to get it. The two young petitzers started giggling, as they will at that age, and I gave them a light, cold glazzy. Andy was back real scurry, waving the great shiny white sleeve of the ninth, which had on it, brothers, the frown beetled like thunderbolted litso of Ludwig van himself. "Here," said Andy, "shall we give it a trial spin?" But I wanted it back home and my stereo to slushy on my oddy knocky, greedy as hell. I fumbled out the deng to pay. One of the little petitzers said, "Who you getting, bratty? What biggie? What only?" These young Devotchkas had their own like way of gavareting. "The Heaven 17, Luke Stern, Googly Goggle." And both giggled, rocking and hippie. Then an idea hit me, and made me near fall over with the anguish and ecstasy of it. Oh, my brothers. So I could not breathe for nearly 10 seconds. I recovered and made with my new clean zoobies and said, "What you got back home, little sisters, to play your fuzzy warbles on?" Because I could video the disc they were buying with these teeny pop veshes. "I bet you got little saved tiny portables like picnic spinners." And they sort of pushed their lower lips out at that. "Come with Uncle," I said, "and hear all proper. Hear angels, trumpets and devil trombones. You are invited." And I like bowed. They giggled again and one said, "Oh, but we're so hungry. Oh, but we could so eat." The other said, "Yeah, she can say that, can't she just?" So I said, "Eat with Uncle. Name your place." Then they vidded themselves as real sophistos, which was like pathetic, and started talking in big lady goluses about the Ritz and the Bristol and the Hilton and Il Restaurante Gran Turco. But I stopped that with "Fella Uncle," and led them to the pasta parlour just round the corner, and let them feel their innocent young lipsos on spaghetti and sausages and cream puffs and banana splits and hot choc sauce, till I near sicked with the sight of it. I, brothers, lunching but frugally off a cold ham slice and a growling dollop of chilli.